You're listening to the WFYI Weekly News Podcast for Friday, February 26th, 2016. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, for undocumented immigrants in the United States, access to health care can be hard to come by.
To ignore that they require health care like every other person in the country is, I think, it's morally suspect.
Is the state of Illinois' budget impasse affecting applications to Indiana colleges?
So there's a natural tendency for some students to think about transferring elsewhere.
And after tests detected lead in an Indiana town's water supply, local leaders there are proceeding with an abundance of caution. Those stories and more are coming up. Please stay tuned. Immigration and health care have been major campaign issues so far this election year. Meanwhile, for many of the 11.3 million undocumented immigrants already living in the United States, getting access to health care is an ongoing problem. Jake Harper of Side Effects Public Media tells us about one issue that's putting many undocumented immigrants and their doctors in a tough position.
Voy a hacer la demostración.
Carla's kidneys don't work, so every night she connects a bag of fluid to a dialysis machine about the size of a couch cushion. While she sleeps, it pumps the fluid into her abdomen to clean her blood. Before Carla got the equipment at home, getting dialysis used to be harder. She says she used to go to the county hospital, Eskenazi, for regular treatments. But then one day in 2014, she was turned away.
My lungs were full of fluid. I explained to the doctors that I couldn't breathe, and they told me it wasn't true, that I had to wait 3 more days.
So she waited, as toxins continued to build up in her blood. Standard dialysis for people with kidney failure is given about every 2 days. At this point, Carla was only getting it every 10 days, and sometimes she ended up in the ICU.
I was like that for 3 months, suffering, throwing up. I couldn't eat anything. It was really hard for my daughter and my mom and dad to see me like that.
The reason the hospital wasn't giving Carla more regular dialysis is because she's uninsured. She's uninsured because she's undocumented. She's not eligible for any public insurance except for emergency Medicaid. And hospitals can't bill emergency Medicaid until they know for sure it's an emergency. So for kidney disease, doctors sometimes wait until there are dangerous levels of potassium in the blood or fluid in the lungs.
And it repeats and repeats and repeats.
Melissa Anderson is a nephrologist in Indianapolis. She says she quit working at the county hospital in part because repeatedly delaying dialysis harms the patients.
And so you see them one day, and then you see them 2 months later, and they've aged, and you can see the suffering. You just hope they survive the hospitalization, but you know they might die before we see them again, and that's heart-wrenching. It's heart-wrenching for all of us.
This is a national issue. A 2010 article published in the American Journal of Kidney Diseases estimated that there were 5,500 undocumented immigrants in the U.S. who need dialysis. And the Renal Physicians Association says their dialysis should be covered by emergency Medicaid.
They're here. They're working. They live with us. They're part of our communities.
Michael Gardner has been dealing with this for years as a doctor and hospital administrator in Houston, Texas.
To ignore that they require health care like every other person in the country is, I think, it's morally suspect, and I think it's fiscally foolish.
He says it's fiscally foolish because it costs a lot more to wait for emergencies. Instead of just paying for dialysis, you end up with ER charges, lab charges, x-ray charges, medication charges. In 2007, researchers from Baylor University found emergency treatment is nearly 4 times as expensive as regular dialysis. It costs close to $300,000 a year per patient, and taxpayers are footing the bill.
You know, it would be one thing if it was better care for more cost, or worse care for low cost, but it's bad care for high cost. It's the worst possible answer.
He says one better answer is charity care. Gardner runs a program at the Riverside Clinic in Houston that gives free dialysis to 176 people, primarily undocumented immigrants. Or states could change their laws to basically say the need for regular dialysis is an emergency, so hospitals can bill Medicaid for it. Some states, such as California and New York, have already done that. But in Indiana, a bill to fix the issue has died in committee the past 2 years. The machine Carla uses for dialysis now was lent to her through charity care. But for patients like Carla, the best solution is to get off dialysis for
good. I've talked with my doctor, and she said a transplant would be ideal for me.
Her brother's even willing to donate a kidney. But to get coverage for a transplant, she'll need a visa, and she's waiting on that to come through. Jake Harper, Side Effects Public Media.
This piece was produced by Side Effects Public Media a reporting collaborative focused on public health. Illinois' public colleges are in trouble. More than halfway through the state's fiscal year, Illinois' Republican governor and Democratic-controlled legislature remain deadlocked over the state budget. The impasse has meant the state's 12 public universities and 48 community colleges haven't received a penny of state funding going on 9 months. It's a nerve-wracking time for students who are being left on the hook for tuition since the state isn't paying out money for grants and scholarships. As State Impact Indiana's Sarah Whitmire reports, this could be having an impact on Hoosier State universities, as some of those students in Illinois are choosing to transfer.
Eastern Illinois freshmen Caitlin Reposh and Jenny Cisneros find themselves in a difficult position. They love their school.
We all care about our school and that we don't want it to close down.
They're at home walking through campus, but in some ways they feel like they're standing by and watching it die by a thousand cuts.
Like, we're not just here because we just want to, like, go to a college away from home. We actually want to be here.
But that decision isn't totally Cisneros to make. Eastern Illinois is struggling. Lawmakers' failure to pass a state budget this year means public universities have gotten no money. At EIU, that amounts to $40 million for operations and another $7 million plus for grants for low-income students. Universities are dipping into their reserves and emergency funds to stay afloat. But as the impasse heads into its ninth month, the cuts are getting deeper and more noticeable.
Even last night, my friend was saying how, in like her math class, like they would always provide like graph paper, but the teacher's like, oh no, like we don't have the money for the graph paper. Like we don't have the money for this because like all of the budget cuts and everything.
Eastern laid off nearly 200 employees and is requiring others to take furlough days. The friends can't help but feel anxious.
The teachers seem scared. It's like if... like your professors seemed like they were worried, then like it made the student, like it makes the students feel worried too.
Eastern's president declined our request for an interview, but in an effort to ease concerns and also to dispel rumors, he penned a letter to students this week saying he expects the state appropriation to come soon. And he reiterated the university is not closing. The message was just as much for parents as it was for students.
My mom was worried about me transferring. She wanted me to come to like ISU or something, and I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
That's LaShawn Harvin, a junior at EIU. He just wants to be able to take the classes he needs to finish.
And then my teachers told me that the credits wouldn't transfer over as well, so that'd be a loss.
If you're a student at a school like that, how confident are you going to be to continue there?
John Beacon is in charge of enrollment at Indiana State University.
So there's a natural tendency for some students to think about transferring elsewhere.
He says there are a lot of places Illinois students can look if they want to transfer. Wisconsin, Iowa, and Purdue already draw a lot of Illinois students. But in some ways, ISU is uniquely positioned. The campus is only about 40 miles from EIU, and the towns are quite similar.
Certainly the local students who go to Eastern Illinois University from those counties probably chose Eastern because of its location. Because we're fairly close to them, I would anticipate that if there are students that are looking to transfer from Eastern, the likelihood is they'll look at us because we're very similar in many ways.
Indiana has seen a gradual increase this year in the number of students enrolling from Illinois. But the State Commission for Higher Education says it's too early to say whether that's connected to Illinois' budget impasse. The situation in Illinois isn't expected to get much better soon. Some politicos are speculating the governor and the legislature won't come to terms until after the state's primary election in March. Others think the political infighting will continue and there won't be a budget this year. It all has a ripple effect. If students keep transferring, there will be even less money flowing into schools in the form of tuition. And as Eastern's president wrote, without the state supporting public universities, the cost in tuition would become unaffordable for most Illinois citizens who would then leave Illinois to seek higher education. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Sarah Whitmire.
The water crisis in Flint, Michigan has people all over the country wondering if their water is safe to drink. It's a question especially on the minds of residents in Greentown, Indiana, after recent tests showed elevated levels of lead in some of the water there. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Brozier reports, local leaders in the Howard County town are proceeding with an abundance of caution.
Dozens of containers of bottled water are stacked in the middle of the main office at Eastern Howard High School.
Our children are probably more hydrated than they've ever been.
Superintendent Tracy Cadell says it's been this way since test results came back in January and revealed elevated levels of lead in some of the school corporation's water. The EPA's lead action level is 15 parts per billion or higher. Tests came back with levels at 20 parts per billion in a high school classroom and 22 parts per billion at a kindergarten water fountain.
That raised some concerns, although it's not a Flint, Michigan situation. In Flint, they had levels as high as 13,000 per billion in some cases. But still, it was elevated.
So the school corporation shut off its water fountains and for a couple of days even forbid students from washing their hands in the school's sinks. Until levels dip back down below the allowable limit, the corporation is spending $400 a day to provide bottled water for drinking and cooking.
We're going to keep spending the money until we get the all clear from the health department that we can start transitioning back to the Greentown Water Utility.
The schools teamed up with the county health department last week to offer free lead testing for students and staff. They tested over 600 people. Howard County licensed lead risk assessor Karen Long says an overwhelming majority of lead issues are traced back to paint.
We do expect some levels to be elevated, but we really think the level elevation will be from the home environment, perhaps from a lead-based paint source, which is really our greatest problem with lead.
But levels of lead aren't just running high in the school's water. The Indiana Department of Environmental Management found elevated levels of lead in November while doing routine testing on some Greentown homes and businesses. The town is already taking steps to correct the issue, asking IDEM for an emergency construction permit to install a polyphosphate injection system. They started using it earlier this month, and Howard County Health Officer Don Zent says it will help address the town's aging infrastructure.
What happens with the water when it goes through the pipes, just because of aging of the pipes, it may contain lead, the plumbing components and so on. The lead, just because of normal corrosion, may leak out into the water. When they add phosphate to the water, it helps to stabilize and stop that corrosive process and the leaching of the lead.
The county health department is offering free testing for Greentown Water customers who live in homes built before 1986. That's when new laws about lead-based plumbing were enacted. Public health nursing manager Jennifer Sexton says they already had about 25 people come in for a test kit.
I think it's important for folks to be able to determine what their lead level is for their own comfort.
It could take some time for the town's new polyphosphate injection system to bring lead levels back down. Even so, the health department says Greentown water is safe to drink. The local school corporation just isn't taking any chances. They're installing filtration systems on all of their drinking fountains, a project that will cost about $13,000. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Brozier in Greentown.
Finally this week, this Saturday evening, Arlington High School in Indianapolis will present the play Broken Bondage, A Time to Celebrate Us. The production mixes live music and acting, dancing, and singing to tell the struggles and inspiration of Black Americans. WFYI education reporter Eric Weddle spent an afternoon at a recent practice and brought back this report.
Thirty Arlington students make up the cast and crew for Broken Bondage, the first theatrical performance at the Northeast Side School since it restarted last summer. Playwright Kiana Watley of Indianapolis says she sought out Arlington not just to find eager student actors and singers, but teach them about the perseverance of African Americans. She says the family at the center of the play is possibly like some from the school.
The mother is tired of seeing her kids just drowning, you know, just mentally, spiritually, and emotionally, because their father got shot and killed because of a mistaken identity. And once you take the father out of the home, it leaves the kids, it leaves the family unbalanced. And so she basically takes them on a journey to encourage them about their history.
That journey begins in Africa and winds its way through slavery in the American South.
To yet another one of our master's babies. Viewed only as a sexual savage, being raped and beaten, forced to bear more children.
To Madam C.J. Walker, 1960s and 70s soul music like The Temptations, and to the modern day Black Lives Matter movement.
Hands up, don't shoot!
We won't make the move!
Hands up, don't shoot!
We won't make the move!
1920s Harlem is also a focus. During a beauty parlor scene, sophomore Joy Mosley belts out a solo while decked out in glittering flapper clothes.
I don't normally sing in front of big crowds and stuff like that. I've been in a few other school productions and stuff like that, but I didn't have major roles like this. People always say I have an old soul, so I'm pretty much, I live in it, honestly. So it really wasn't as hard. It's just the clothing that I'm trying to get used to for right now.
Freshman Mika Childress says the play balances history with the concerns of her generation. She plays the daughter of the man killed, and her character's outlook is one she thinks many students can relate to.
I'm playing a character that is not interested in school anymore, who is not inspired anymore, and I'm trying to get my inspiration back by like hearing about my history and stuff like that, so that's pretty good.
The students are also learning how to act. During another scene, some of them are dressed in white Ku Klux Klan robes and hoods, and they storm into a Harlem bar. Kimberly Reed, who helped write some of the dialogue and design the stage set, is not happy with it. Instead of expressing terror, the teen actors seem too exaggerated, almost silly. So Reed gets on stage and gives them direction.
Walk in like y'all own it. Walk around. Don't everybody scatter like that. I need two girls. Grab each other. Be scared. You're scared. You're afraid. They getting ready to burn the whole building down. How you gonna get out of there? Oh my gosh. And then let yourself go and run.
Broken Bondage's playwright Watley makes no apologies that her message is aimed at Black families. She hopes by mixing history, inspiration, and entertainment, it will lead to some tough and loving conversations at the dinner table.
I'm speaking to the families to teach them to continue to teach their kids about their history, to continue to inspire them so they can come in here and they can learn and they can find their way in the world.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Eric Weddle.
I've got so much fun at B's and G. I got a sweet song.
That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. You can follow us online at WFYI.org, on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, just search WFYI. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. You can stream it on the web at SoundCloud, just search WFYI there as well. This podcast is a production of WFYI News. The stories you hear on this podcast come from Indiana Public Broadcasting stations. It was produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios, located on North Meridian Street in the heart of the Circle City, Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.